Part 3. The Bridge. 1. December 28, 2025. The last 3 days were a blur, but my toes were finally starting to feel normal again. Beverly's car pulled into the grocery store parking lot, and I stretched my hood over my head, stalking toward her as she exited the vehicle. She let out a yelp as I arrived, her hands protectively moving onto her handbag, as if I was a purse snatcher. "It's me, Bev," I whispered.
"Rex, what the hell are you doing? I haven't heard from you for days," and
I grabbed her wrist and squeezed harder than I'd intended. "Your life is in danger. You have to call Fred. Tell him to meet us with the kids at the truck stop 20 minutes east of town. You know the one with the cartoon fried egg sign?"
"I know it. What's going on?"
Bev acted petrified, and I didn't blame her one bit. "I'll tell you when we're gone." I looked around, wondering if we were being watched. "Have you noticed anyone following you, parked outside your house?"
"No, Rex, please, you're scaring me. Fred can't just leave."
"Bev, listen to me," I said, holding her hands. "Trust me on this. I'm into some dangerous business, and they know who you are. These guys, they killed Hunter."
"Hunter?"
Her eyes jumped open.
"Madison? The rich guy Dad used to work for?"
"Shh, sis. Bring the family and meet me at the truck stop. If you have to go home to convince Fred, do so physically, in case they're listening to your phone, too. On that note, ditch the phone and tell Fred the same thing."
"What's this all about?"
she asked. "The bridge. It's where they went."
"Not that again. Dad's gone, Rex."
I forced a smile. "Dad is gone, but the bridge is real. You've seen the objects, right?"
"The asteroids?"
she asked. "Right. It's all connected." I didn't have time for this, but I realized how insane it sounded as the words escaped my lips. "I know what you're thinking, Beverly, but it's real. Just pack them up and be there in an hour." To her credit, she didn't freak out, which was better than I would have done if our roles were reversed. She climbed into the car and rolled the window down.
"Rex, you won't let anything happen to my kids, will you?"
That was my sister in her big heart. She was always worried about everyone else before herself. "No, Bev, I won't." She drove off, and I returned to my rental car. "Good news, passports are done," Marcus said from his makeshift workstation in the back seat. "We can pick them up in Boston." "You know, I'm glad you kept some unsavory friends from college, buddy," I told him. "How's the leg?" He shrugged ambiguously. "Fine. Stitches tickle a bit." Lucky for him, the gunshot had grazed his leg, resulting in Tripp giving him a handful of sutures on the flight to Chile. It could have been far worse. "Let's tell Veronica we're coming," I said as I backed out of the parking spot. "Done." The streets were busy in my hometown, with most of the residents still off for the holiday season. The restaurants and malls looked hectic, and I drove by them with little interest as we hit the interstate. The truck stop came quickly, and I took the turnoff, slowing as I skidded on the gravel lot. "Do you mind checking the radio?" Marcus asked, and I tapped it on. We had a few minutes to spare, and I was tired of hearing myself overthink our plan.
"Bill, you don't think we're supposed to believe these objects, as everyone is calling them, are actually stopping at Earth, do you?"
a deep-voiced man asked across the radio waves.
"Carl, I'm only reiterating what I've heard. More and more members of the scientific community are beginning to ascertain just that. The objects have not only changed trajectory twice so far, but their speed is no longer constant."
"What do you think that means?"
Bill McCreary asked.
"They did move close enough to Saturn to be affected by the gravitational pull of that planet, not to mention the smaller forces of the moons," Carl told him.
"You're both crazy. How in God's green earth do we even know they are real? Have you seen the things people are doing with CGI these days? This is another conspiracy to distract us from what's really going on down here,"
a different man said.
"And what's that, anonymous caller?" Bill asked with a snicker.
"Our guns. The government wants our guns. And if you ask the right people, they're after our firstborns, too."
"Firstborns? I think you've called into the wrong show. Rumpelstiltskin isn't in today," Bill joked, and I turned the radio off.
"What'd you do that for?" Marcus asked. "These wackos' theories aren't going to help us," I said. The window was open, letting in cool air. I pushed on the mirror, adjusting it. A minivan was directly behind us, 100 yards away, and the car was running with the lights off. A trail of exhaust floated from the rear. I tried to see who was inside, and for a second it was Francois, his menacing eyes piercing into the reflection. Then the door opened, and a woman walked out, shouting at a little boy to hurry up. I was starting to lose it, to see things that weren't really there. I had to assume the believers were around every corner, or they'd catch up to me. A knock rapped on the passenger door, and I pulled the gun from under my seat.
"Relax, Rex,"
Veronica said as she opened it. Her hair was cut shorter, dyed a dark brown. Her eyes were a penetrating bright blue as she stared at me.
"Trip's waiting inside. Care to join us?"
Her voice held a sharp edge to it. Marcus had already determined there was no CCTV here, and that was why we'd chosen the discreet meeting location. Plus, with lots of truckers coming in and out, as well as penny-pinching travelers during the holiday season, no one would notice our group. "Tell your contact we'll be there in 2 hours, Marcus." I climbed out, depositing the rental's keys in my pocket. I pulled a Red Sox hat on and saw my reflection in the gas station window. My beard was coming in, and with the dark bags under my eyes, the plaid jacket and the baseball cap, I didn't even recognize myself. The door chimes rang as we entered the diner, but no one turned to see who was there.
"Sit anywhere you like,"
a red-headed waitress called from behind the counter. She was hastily refilling two truckers' cups, and we joined Tripp in a corner booth that would accommodate a party of 10. It smelled like every other diner in the state, a mixture of stale coffee and hash browns. Tripp could have been a stranger. His head was trimmed into a buzz cut, his face bare as an egg. With a leather jacket and jeans on, he looked nothing like the military man I'd come to know. Marcus kept his own cap low as he sat, scooting over to Tripp's side. He'd chosen to grow a goatee and wore a plaid jacket similar to mine, completing his disguise. Veronica waited and went beside Marcus. I took the other end, constantly scouting the entrance for any sign of Bev. "Coffees?" I said, and the waitress flipped our white china cups, splashing thick brew into them.
"Anything else?" "I'll take a burger. Fries."
Marcus slid a menu at her and shrugged.
"What? A guy's got to eat."
I was still a mess, not ready for a meal until Bev and her family were safe. I couldn't let anything happen to them or to these three people. Hunter's death clung to me like a bad cologne. The chime rang again, and Bev was there, Fred taking the lead the moment he saw me. I stood, confronting his angry posture. "Fred, before you say anything," his fists were clenched, his eyes burning.
"What have you done?"
He spoke quietly despite his mood, and I motioned for them to have a seat. The kids stayed behind Bev, who seemed far more exhausted than she had in the grocery store parking lot. Edith held Carson's hand, and their eyes were puffy, as if they'd just been crying. "Fred, we'll talk about it when we get to the safe house. Do the kids need anything to eat?" I asked my sister. Fred poked me in the chest, hard.
"Where are we supposed to go?"
I looked around. We were garnering some attention.
"Seriously, I can't talk here. Trust me, Fred. I'm only doing what's necessary for you and the family."
He glanced at my team and nodded slowly.
"Fine, but this isn't over. Where are we going?"
I leaned in, whispering an address. He scrambled for a piece of paper and a pen, but I shook my head.
"Memorize it."
"Marcus?" Marcus stood, handing Fred a burner phone.
"Use a map on this. There's one number saved on there and it's mine. Text if there's any issues. We'll be at the house in an hour and a half."
Fred sighed and took the offering, shoving it in his jeans pocket. He no longer appeared upset, just afraid.
"Are we going to be okay?"
I set a hand on his shoulder, giving it a light squeeze.
"I think so."
The waitress came, dropping the one plate to the table with a clatter, and Marcus smiled apologetically at her.
"Can I get this to go?"
We were 10 minutes late, and by the time we arrived at the destination, we had a folder full of fake passports and a few other pieces of identification. Marcus hadn't been kidding when he'd said his acquaintance was the real deal. I only hoped they worked when we used them at the airport. I opened one, seeing Edith's face. It was a good thing Bev was one of those mothers that insisted on posting every life event on social media, because we'd had a lot of options. This one showed the girl with no smile, cropped from a school picture the previous fall. This region of Boston wasn't on my radar, but it was beautiful. To our left was the Massachusetts Bay, and to the right I spotted a lone lighthouse, standing tall and white, matching the snow on the shore.
"How many places did Hunter own?" Marcus asked.
"No idea. The memory stick he carried hadn't contained much, but it had supplied this address and a 5-digit code, as well as a farewell message from Hunter himself. I closed my eyes, picturing the speech he'd given us. His expression had been cheerful, and I couldn't pinpoint when he'd filmed it. He'd fussed with the angle of the camera a bit before settling on one that made his chin look too big and his eyes distant. From the background, I guessed it had been inside the Parisian hotel, perhaps even on the night we'd ventured out in search of the third token.
"Rexford, if you're watching this, something dire has happened to me. To be honest with you, since the moment I saw you in the alley behind Hardy's place in New York, I feel like each day has been a blessing. My life was due to come to an end eventually, and I'd been feeling that more and more lately. I am not well. The doctors have given me months, so if your heart is heavy over this outcome, rest assured it was inevitable. I suppose death is with every one of us, and I've lived a good life. Better than most, I like to think, even with my obsession looming over me with every step I took."
Hunter smiled as his hand slipped from the frame, returning with a glass of wine. It was 3/4 full, and he sniffed it before taking a sip.
"Don't live with regrets, Rex. Drink the best wines, find love, start a family, because even though we die alone, it doesn't mean we should live alone."
I'd teared up the first time we'd watched this. The two of us were more similar than I'd understood, and I heard the truth behind his advice. Now, as I sat parked beside the gate's keypad, the memory only firmed my resolve. "Are we going in?" Marcus asked. He was beside me, and he looked concerned. "Do you remember the code?"
"I remember it."
I pressed the buttons, and the gate buzzed, swinging inward. The house was more subdued than his East Hampton mansion, but it was still sprawling, laid out in a ranch style facing the ocean. My sister's car sat beside Tripp's borrowed truck, and the lights at the entrance were on. I parked beside them and stepped out, breathing the salty air from the water, only 100 yards past the house. As I threw Hunter's pack over my shoulders, I pictured the rest of the message. Hunter leaned toward the camera, his neatly trimmed beard filling the screen.
"You'll find what you need where I've sent you. It's the best I can do," he whispered, glancing around the room. "Rex, finish this. And if you find Dirk, tell him I understand why he left me behind."
I thought about this as I approached the house. Beverly's shadow met me at the door, and Marcus walked past her with a quiet greeting.
"I appreciate you bringing us to your dead billionaire friend's house, Rex, but you need to tell us the truth."
Fred joined her, and I stepped inside, seeing the kids in the living room playing a card game with Veronica. They were laughing, a joyful sound to break the tension. Kids were resilient, and they didn't understand or grasp the severity of our situation. "Can we talk outside?" I asked. I let go of my pack and left my shoes on as I strode through the place. It was warm and inviting. A fire crackled in the wood-burning hearth, and Tripp knelt at it, feeding the flames another log. This house was far different, a style I hadn't expected from Hunter, but he was a man full of surprises. I glanced at the edge of the kitchen to where a fully stocked bar sat. "I think you might want a drink for this." Fred nodded, taking my cue, and he went over, pouring bourbon from a crystal decanter. I was grateful for his heavy hand as I led the pair to the balcony outside. A gas heater had already been turned on, and Bev wore a jacket standing beside the hissing warmth. "Okay, I know it was a jerk move ambushing you at the grocery store," I admitted. The water crashed against the shore, and I stared at the waves as the sun descended in the west.
"You scared the daylights out of me. Can you imagine what it was like going home to Fred? Telling him we had to leave, and the neighbors took in Roger for us? But I don't know how long they'll keep him."
The words poured out of her lips, and she took a drink with a shaky hand. A few drops slid off the glass and landed on the gray deck.
"Rex, this better be good. Tell us why we're here."
Fred was far calmer than my sister, and I appreciated it. He'd be able to protect her if necessary. I could see it in his eyes.
"So?"
I went into it. I told them about the clue on Clayton's gravestone and my subsequent trip to Venezuela to gather the case.
Bev started to cry when I described the coordinates we found in the airport, and Fred was done with his drink by the time I explained finding Castro's house burned to the ground in the outback. The sun had fully set, leaving the evening air crisp and humid. The moon was large, reflecting angrily off the tumultuous ocean waves, as I described the next five stops. When I got to the Believers and our showdown in the South Pole, Fred was pacing the patio, running his hands through his hair.
"Rex, you're saying they know who we are? Why would that matter? We haven't done anything."
His voice was loud, and even though I didn't expect the cult to be nearby, I still pressed a finger to my lips.
"That won't matter. I'm beginning to understand how they operate. I have something they want. They'll use anything possible to get my attention, and that means you."
I pointed at Bev. She was all out of tears, and I saw the fighting spirit in her eyes as she watched me.
"Maybe Richard can help," she said.
"Richard?"
"Klein. He's been texting me, said if I saw you, to let you know he has something you'll want to see."
Bev pulled out her phone and passed it to me.
"I thought I said to ditch these."
I quickly turned off the location and data service. I glanced at Fred and he shrugged.
"Left mine at home, like you said."
I scrolled her recent texts. Richard's name was third from the top and I read them. "Richard.
Beverly, you need to take this seriously. Rex might be in some real danger. If you see him, tell him I have something imperative to his venture. Don't delay."
I scanned it twice and turned the phone off, tossing it over the deck toward the rocky beach. The text was from yesterday.
"Where are we going?"
Beverly asked me.
"Portugal," I said.
"Why?"
"That's where the bridge entrance is. We're hoping to learn the location in this house. Hunter's message said we'd find what we'd need here." I glanced inside, seeing my niece and nephew had convinced Marcus to join their card game.
"Anyone want another drink?"
Fred asked, and I declined. He took Bev's glass and brought it inside with him. Beverly appeared deflated.
"I can't bring the family to Portugal. We have school in a week, and Fred has the company."
"We don't have a choice, Bev. This is important, and until we can figure out a way to convince the Believers that you're not on the playing field, it's the only solution I could think of."
"And how do we do that?"
"I'm working on it. We don't even have the last token, so I don't know that it matters."
The weight of the last few weeks bore down on me, and I watched my sister, wondering what I'd been thinking by dragging her into this. Beverly's posture snapped straighter and she grabbed my hands.
"These tokens. You didn't say what they looked like."
I scowled as I retrieved them from my jacket pocket. I hadn't let them out of my sight, not for a moment. All five of them were quite heavy together, and I slid the top one off, handing her the hexagonal alien metal piece. It slipped from her fingers and she quickly grabbed it from the bleached boards underfoot.
"You have to be kidding me. And you need six of these to make this case thingy work?"
"That's what we're after." She paled and turned away, heading through the doors.
"Give me a minute."
Fred stopped her, but she shook him off, rushing to the kitchen island to snatch her purse. She took a wrapped gift out of it and returned with the slow walk of someone trudging to death row. Tripp and Veronica noticed something was off and they both rose, coming closer to Fred. I walked inside, closing the patio doors, and saw my sister was crying.
"What is it?"
I asked. She didn't speak. Just handed the present to me. My name was written on a little sticker with a cartoon reindeer on it. The wrapping was quality, red and green plaid inlaid with gold flecks. Bev had added a cloth ribbon. She always had been good at this kind of thing.
"This was for you. Dad gave it to me when I was a little girl. Well, he sent it to me."
My heart fluttered.
"You had the watch, and when Dad vanished, I was so jealous that he'd given you a reminder of him and not me. I was his princess, but he gave you a final present. I wanted that connection to him."
Her eyes were flooded with tears, and they streamed down her cheeks. Fred was immediately there, wrapping an arm around her waist.
"What's in the box?"
My vision blurred, white spots dancing around my periphery. Hunter's living room had soft leather furniture, and I stumbled toward the rear of the couch.
"He sent it to me, Rex. He loved me and wanted to offer something from his last dig. That's what I thought all these years."
"Why didn't you tell us you had this?
Where was it postmarked from?" I asked.
"Paris, which didn't make sense until tonight."
"It did to me." Luis would have mailed the token to Beverly from one of the drops he was sent on, but the main question was why he'd couriered it in the first place. I plucked at the ribbon, untying it. The paper came off in a hurry with no thoughts of salvaging the wrapping as our mother used to do. The wooden box was stylish, dark, and hearty, which reminded me of the African blackwood in Hunter's study. I hadn't noticed the others piling around, and when I peered up, the entire team was there, waiting from a few steps away. Veronica had tears in her eyes, but Tripp only crossed his arms, jaw clenched. Marcus was smiling, his fist near his chest, in anticipation. The lid was hinged, and I lifted it open. The sixth token was inside, and I made a noise, a mixture of agony and unabashed joy.
I kept it with me for the first year in my backpack under my pillow, hoping it would connect me to Dad. But after a while, I started to forget him, what he looked like, his smell, the roughness of his palms as he held my hand taking me to the playground, and just like any young girl, I forgot about the gift. I stowed it away in my closet under piles of dolls, toy oven accessories, and eventually teen magazines and makeup cases. When I saw you at Thanksgiving so adamant on finding his trail again, it made me think of what he'd sent me 35 years ago. And I had the box made up with the intention of giving it to you on Christmas morning. I imagined your delight at obtaining it. A connection to Dirk Walker. And then you told me you couldn't join us. Richard's texts and the college president's calls.
What did you say? I stared at the token. The symbol was familiar, drawn in the borders of my dad's journal. It looked like a tree on fire, with the leaves each aflame. Jessica?
She called me a couple of times asking after you. I think she got your number from Richard, but...
I had the entire collection of tokens.
What did she say?
She was wondering if I knew where you'd gone. She had some things to discuss, but you weren't answering her texts, calls, or emails, and she was beginning to worry.
That didn't matter. Only the token she'd given me was important.
Rex, we did it.
Marcus bumped shoulders with me, and I let him pick up the final token.
It couldn't be real. None of it.
The last few weeks had been a dream. Hunter was dead, and we were so close, but we still lacked the exact location of the bridge's cavern. Where's the information Hunter left us? I asked. Tripp nodded toward the hallway.
In the study.
Good. I took the token from Marcus's palm and added it to the pile of five. A spark carried through my body, making my toes and fingertips tingle, but it could have been the minor frostbite, reminding me of the cold I'd endured a couple days prior.
There's something else,
Veronica said. She departed from the room and returned with Hardy's journal in her hands. She passed it to me and I studied the pages. It had been written in the Believer's alien language, and Hunter had begun to decipher it. There were notes in the corners, sections highlighted and transcribed.
Did you read it? I asked.
Haven't had an opportunity. We just remembered it,
she said defensively.
This changes everything, doesn't it?
Tripp walked closer and I handed the journal to him.
We stick to the plan. Head to Portugal, as he suggested. We'll make our base at his property there and see if we can find the coordinates for this cavern.
Estrelas,
I whispered the last word.
What are you doing?
Marcus asked. You have that gleam in your eyes.
I'm going to see an old friend. I had my jacket on and I hesitantly passed Marcus the tokens.
Watch these for me.
You're not leaving alone,
Tripp said, reaching for his own jacket near the exit. I stopped him from putting it on.
No way. You're staying with my sister and her family.
Richard's my friend. I questioned my trust in the man with his recent actions, sending Beverly cryptic messages saying he could help me. If he knew anything in regard to my father's disappearance, why had he never shared the details with me before?
I'll join you,
Veronica said, and she was out the door faster than I could deny her. To be honest, it was a relief.
Don't go unarmed,
Tripp said, and I nodded, knowing there was a gun under my seat in the rental. He tossed me my keys from the island, and I glanced at Beverly. There was one more thing I had to know.
Did the token come with a note?
Bev wiped away her tears and smiled at my question.
I'll never forget it. Be the light that shines like a star. I love you, Beverly Jane Walker.
The words from my father echoed in my head.
He adored you,
I told her, and turned to Tripp.
Find out what the journal says, and whatever breadcrumbs Madison left behind. I want to be off first thing in the morning.
Marcus nodded to me, and I glanced at the stack of tokens in his grip.
I hated to leave them, but didn't want to risk bringing the entire collection into the open.
"Who is this guy?" Veronica asked as we climbed into the rental.
"A friend of my dad's. He's been a mentor to me," I said, and drove past the gate, heading for Boston.